Okay, Rabosai, for Parshas Balak, which is a parsha that would take us a year, literally, to study if we only had the time, which I don't have the time, I wish I did. And if I live another life, I would really dedicate it to Parshas Balak. I mean, the words of the Psukim are very, very difficult. And what I want to focus on is one little piece of the puzzle. This is Bamidbar Chav Dalid, Psukim Yudches, Yutes. And then we'll skip a little bit to Chav Gimel and Chav Dalid. And this is one of the visions of Bilam. If we have by any chance a Sefer Daniel with an English translation, because Daniel is in very difficult Aramaic, so that would be great. I don't know if we have such a Sefer somewhere. But just as... You do have? Okay, so a little later on, I'm going to ask you if you don't mind to bring it, because the Ramban here in Balak is massive, and in this particular case, he builds a whole theory on Daniel. Daniel has four chayos, which represent the four golios, and the Ramban is going to try to decipher who these chayos, these various respective chayos represent, and which golios, and why those golios were chosen. And this is all here in the Ramban in Parshas Balak. So first we have to know, before we get into the Psukim here, that in Pasuk Yudches, the Nevuah of Bilam is focused on Edom. Edom, as we'll see, which is also associated with Seir in this Pasuk Seir, is Esav and his descendants. Edom, the Edomites, are Rome. Okay, again, this is all just general ideas. And then, in Pasuk Yutes, it says, V'yered mi Yaakov, which sounds like the impact here of Edom is particularly focused on Yaakov, if Edom is Esav. Now, in the middle here, there's a certain digression from our topic, and that's Pasuk Chaf, which is about Amalek. And then in Pasuk Chav Beis, the Nevuah of Bilam addresses Ashur. Ashur is called in English Assyria. And they are also enemies of the Jewish people. But we're going to see that ultimately Ashur is going to be vanquished by other nations. And then gets the real tough part. This is Pasuk Chav Dalet. And there it says, V'tzim miyad kitim. Okay, now tzim means ships. In fact, there was a company, I don't know if it still exists, called Tzim. Oh, it still exists. I mean, I met my brother who's... Yeah. My brother's about 11 years older than me. When he came to Israel, he came with the ship of Tzim. You know, my time was ready, he came by plane. And there's kitim. Now, we don't know who these kitim are, and that's going to be a big debate. But in any event, there are ships coming from Kitim. V'inu Ashur, which literally means they will afflict Ashur, means they'll defeat Ashur in a military campaign. But tragically, V'inu Aver, they will at the same time, these Kitim will defeat Aver. Now, if as you and I know, we are called what? Even the nations of the world call us by this name. Ivrim, right? Right, a Hebrew or an Ivri. In Russia, under the communists, the Jewish passport was stamped with the word Ivri. You know? Yeah. And that's because we were influenced by Aver. Right? There was shame in Aver. But Ve'inui means that they're going to be defeating Aver. So this is a pretty scary thing. Whoever these Kitim are, they're afflicting not just Assyria, but also Aver, which might be a reference to Klal Yisrael. V'gam hu, but you should know, says Bilam, he, meaning Kitim, whoever the Kitim are, adei oved, they will be forever destroyed. So even though at some point in history, these Kitim reign supreme, they will defeat Ashur, and they will afflict pain and suffering on Aver, which means us, but nevertheless, at the end of days, they will be forever destroyed. What I'd like to try to do with you is to study the Ramban. You have a photocopy of the Ramban in front of you. Oh, I'm sorry. It's one page. And this is the Ramban on Pasuk Yudches. V'hoya Edom Yerasha, which means literally that Edom shall be a conquest. And the Ramban is going to suggest that Edom here is the fourth of the four Golios, the last of the enemies or the nations that will subjugate the Jewish people. And as we'll soon see, the Ramban will analyze Sefer Daniel, because Daniel has four different animals, and the Ramban is going to speak about the fourth of the animal. So again, Vaya Edom Yerasha. Says the Ramban, Mapeles Edom Biyad HaMashiach Tia. The destruction of the fourth nation that will attack, that will subjugate the Jewish people, will only be achieved by Mashiach himself. In other words, this nation called Edom will continue to exist up until Mashiach, which means, Rabosai, that in our time, Edom is still alive and well, according to the Ramban. How so? He says, Ki galusenu hayom biyad Roma li Edom techashev. Today we are suffering in the galus of Roma, of Rome, and that's considered to be part of the exile of what? Of Edom. In other words, the Romans, who you remember destroyed the second temple in the year 70, they still exist today, says the Ramban. They not only drove the Jews into exile at the time of Churban Bayis Sheni, but not only that, these descendants of Esav, or Edom, are still alive today. Goloseinu hayom v'yad Roma li Edom techashev. And the Ramban enhances, he embellishes this. And he quotes a pasuk in Eicha. What does the pasuk say in Eicha? It says, Tam avonech bas Tzion, meaning only when the sins of bas Tzion, of Israel, will be tam, will be terminated, then lo Yosef laglosech, he will no longer send you or keep you into in golus. Pakad avonech bas Edom gila al chatosayech. And at that point in time, which again, this is a description of Mashiach, Hashem will remember the sins of Edom. He has not forgotten the sins of Edom. And Gila al Chatosayach, he will uncover or expose your sins. That's when the destruction of Edom will come about at the end of days. Kilo Yifkod Hashem al Edom Atom Avonos Tzion. When will HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally punish Edom? That's only after the end, the termination of the sins of Tzion. Be Eshelo Yosef Laglosom, when there will be a termination of Golus. God will redeem Klal Yisrael from the exile. And this means that Edom will be alive and well up until the final redemption, up until the time of Mashiach. Alkein Hizkir Bilam Edom. Why did Bilam mention Edom specifically? In other words, there are many. Now, if you go back to Pasuk Yud Zayin, so you'll see, Erenu v'lo atash, Erenu v'lo karov, Darach kocho miyakov v'kom, Shevet miyisrolu machatz, Pase moav, Vikarkar kol b'nei sheis. So the emphasis here is on b'nei sheis, and Edom is not one of the b'nei sheis. So why does Bilam focus on Edom? Says the Ramban, Ki hu hacholek al malchusenu. He is the paradigm of the and you know, of the antithesis of our kingdom. There's the kingdom of Klal Yisrael, and who represents the force against that kingdom of Klal Yisrael? That's Edom. That's the conflict. Ubo Nemar, regarding him, it says back in Sefer Bereishis, Uliom Miliom Yamatz. This is, I believe, Yitzchak, when he bestows the blessings on Yaakov and Esav, Ulaom Milaom Yamatz. If you want to double check me, please open up a Chumash to Bereishis Perek Chafhei. Yisnabe, what Bilam is talking about, his prophecy here is Kilot Sipol Edom Legamre. Edom will not completely fall at Ace Kates until the time of the end of days. Biyad HaKochav HaDorech, in the hands of the Kochav HaDorech, which is the Mashiach. So if you go back to Pasuk Yud Zayin, when it says Dorach Kochav MiYaakov, which is a reference to Mashiach, that's the time when Edom Yeresha, when Edom will be vanquished, will be conquered. Now let's just read a little bit further in the Ramban. The Pasuk, it says V'haya Yeresha Seir Oivav, which means that Seir, his enemies, shall be a conquest. So what does it mean, V'haya? V'haya seems to be in singular, but it should say V'hayu, because this Pasuk is a reference to Oivav. Oivav is in the plural. So why does it say V'haya, and it ends with the word Oivav? So on that, the Ramban says, which should be the last line in your paragraph, V'tam V'haya Yeresha Seir Oivav Sheyeh Yeresha Seir Le'oivav. You see how the Ramban interprets the word Oivav means Le'oivav. It means that Seir shall become a conquest to his enemies, meaning he'll be conquered by his enemies. Now who's the arch enemy of Seir? Seir is Edom. Hello, anybody home? Who's the arch enemy of Seir? No, it's Klal Yisrael. Right? Because again, the ultimate conflict here is between Klal Yisrael and Edom. And the word Oivav is to be read as Le'oivav. Okay? So Le'oivav means that, and Rashi also says this, that they will be destroyed by their enemies. He's being conquered by his enemies. He, meaning Seir or Edom, is conquered by his enemies, meaning by Klal Yisrael. Oh, now the Ramban has a slightly different alternative pshat. He says, Oivav heim Edom v'seir haniskorim shem oive Yaakov. Perhaps the word Oivav means the enemies of Yaakov, which is Edom and Seir. Now at this point, the Ramban seems to assume that Edom and Seir are separate one from the other. Maybe Edom represents Rome, and Seir represents the nations around Rome. That's not clear. V'yi Yeresha, and they will be conquered. In other words, Edom shall be a conquest, Seir shall be a conquest. These are all Yaakov's enemies. Okay. Now, I want to point out to you that the Ramban Lishitaso is very, very focused on Esav. And here he's going to have a bit of a plugto with Ibn Ezra, who's focused more on Yishmael. So what I want you to look at is the paragraph in the Ramban below. And you remember that the Pasuk says, Tzim miyad kitim ve'inu Ashur. Tzim, we said, were ships. And they came from a place called Kitim. And they will afflict Ashur. Now Ashur is Assyria. And the Ramban says, V'lachen. Let's see if we can find this Ramban in your... Just 1 second. Where is it? Okay, I guess this part, I think I cut off from your photocopy. Because yours starts with Haim Haromium, right?
Okay.
Haim Haromium. Okay, just... Okay, so we in one line and a half got cut off. So I'll read to you the line that Kadosh. He says, "Lachein nasa mishalo al ashur shiavo eis arzo gamhu v'ein mishi notzel miyom Hashem agolov anora al kol ha'amim." Now, this phrase in the Ramban, which you don't have on your page, of Yom Hashem HaGadol VaNora, that's a reference to Malachi, and it's a reference to the ultimate day of Mashiach. And the Ramban is saying that Bilam, in this prophecy, is saying that there will be a destruction of the land of Ashur. So even though Ashur, Assyria, has sent Klal Yisrael into Golus, into captivity, nevertheless they, the Ashurians, will also suffer at the day of judgment. And the Ramban says, no one will be saved, right? Ein mishi yinatzel, no nation will be saved on that Yom HaGadol VaNora al kol ha'amim. And why? Why? Well, how do we see that on the judgment day, at the time of Mashiach, all the nations of the world will be judged? Says the Ramban, Shiavo tziim miyad kitim, that ships will come from kitim, the heim haromiyim. Oh, the Ramban reveals the secret of this word, kitim. Kitim is a reference to the Romans. Right, the Inu es Ashur. In other words, they will destroy Ashur. Now, the truth be told, that Ashur was never destroyed by Rome. It was destroyed by the Greeks, by the Persians. But ultimately, the Greeks and the Persians, the entire Babylonian civilization, was conquered by the Romans. So, when the Ramban says here, the Inu es Ashur, that the Romans will afflict Ashur, Assyria, what he really means is that ultimately they will be the successors to the Babylonians and the Persians, who will defeat Ashur. The Inu Eiver Shehem Yisrael, and these Kitim, meaning the Romans, will also afflict Klal Yisrael, the Israelites, who are called Eiver. Lomar She'anu Amagalim Vagolim. The Romans will afflict both Ashur, who are the Megalim, you know, they're the ones who exiled the Jewish people, v'hagolim, and the Romans will afflict the exiled. That's the power of Rome. And Bilam says, v'gam hu im kitim ade oved basof, but even the people of kitim will be forever destroyed. Meaning that that time of the ultimate day of judgment of Mashiach, then the Romans will be destroyed. So every empire that conquers and vanquishes another kingdom will ultimately be judged. V'hine hishlim dvarav bi'avadon kitim. Why does Bilam conclude his prophecy with the instructions of the Romans? And the answer is because heim hachaya haravius shetikaris bi'ad ha-mashiach, that amongst the four beasts that appear in the vision of Daniel, in Perek Zion, which you have here on the left side, the fourth one, and the last one, who's going to be destroyed at the time of Mashiach, is Rome. That's Kitim. Now, which pasuk in Perek Zion specifically refers to the fourth beast? And that's pasuk Yud Aleph, Kmo She'amar, the pasuk says, Vehuvad Gishma V'yahavis likedas eser. Okay, so for this we have to open up a Tanakh with an English translation, because the Tanakh here is murder. Anyone who wants to learn Sefer Daniel is cordially invited to do so. But I would recommend that they first pass a course in Aramaic. But take a look at Pasuk Zion. And he's talking about the Cheva Revia. Do you see that? Cheva Revia. Cheva Revia is the fourth beast. And about this beast, he says, okay, it's, I'm going to need you, Joel, to open that for me. Sorry. I've got my fingers all over the place here. They're trying to follow the text. And I think it's Daniel Zion Pasuk Yud Aleph. So you fast forward to Pasuk Yud Aleph, and it says Chazei, and he says Rav Ravasa, means it's a large animal, right? In Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Sorry, which parak did you say?
It's the seventh parak. Dikarno Mimala. I guess he's talking about the horns of this animal.
So I can read it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I saw it after this because of the sound of the haughty words which the horn spoke. I watched until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and consigned to a flame of fire.
Okay, so I watched till the beast was slain and its body destroyed and consigned to a flame of fire. Okay, this is all in the words Vehuvad. What's the next word? Gishma? Yeah. Vehuvad Gishma. It's a little bit small for my eyes. Vehivas Likavis Essa. And it was consigned to a flame of fire. Says the Ramban. Ki ade oved. In other words, these two words, forever destroyed, here in the Pasuk of Bilam, in the Nevuah of Bilam, he kares zichrom legamrei. They indicate that the memory of this nation will be completely destroyed. V'zeh dover mefursa midivrei avoseinu, ki hachaya haravis shera Daniel hi romi, asher heglesani. Sounds like he's speaking in liturgical poetry. He's saying that the fourth beast, which is identified as the Roman Empire, which exiled us meaning the Jewish people, he doesn't tell you explicitly where we find this in Rabboseinu, in Divrei Rabboseinu. In the footnote here, it says Avodah Zarah, Daf Beis, Breishis Rabbah, Shmos Rabbah. And in all of Chazal, there are four kingdoms that rule over Klal Yisrael: Bavel, Paras, Yavan, and Romi. And Romi, that's the identity of the fourth beast. And this is the Ramban's thesis here. Now, I don't know if there are any other sources to prove this, that the fourth beast of Daniel is Romi. The Ibn Ezra for sure is not going to agree with this pshat. But the Ramban says that if Chazal constantly, consistently speak about the four kingdoms, and the fourth is Romi, then if there are four beasts, and we can go all through them all one by one, and see that they all represent these four, whether it's Bavel, Paras, Yavan, and the fourth beast must be Rome. And why is it the fourth? Because that's the beast that's pouncing upon us even today in our Golus, and Golus Romi is going to reach its fruition and terminate at the time of Mashiach. So that's the fourth in the whole sequence of beasts, of kingships. The Hi Asher Tovei Biad Mashiach, and it will be destroyed at the end of days. Now the Ramban says the following. There's a certain kasha that the Ramban has to face here by identifying Kitim as Romi. He says, and you might ask me the following question: if the third of the four Malchus in the dream of Daniel is Yavan, and that's explicit in Daniel, not in the chapter that I showed you here, but in chapter 8, if you can fast forward to Perek Ches of Daniel, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. And there there's a vision with two animals.
Yeah, the he goat, the kingdom of the he goat, the kingdom of Greece, and the large horn that is between its eyes is its first king. And it has a footnote there, referring to Alexander the Great, who conquered the Persians.
Okay. So in any event, the third beast is Greece, is Yavan. And that's explicit in Daniel. He says, "V'kitim hu mizera Yavan." he says that the pasuk in Bereishis in Perek Yud says explicitly, "Ubnei Yavan Elisha v'Tarshish Kitim v'Dodanim." So it means Kitim is a descendant of Yavan. We don't know that the Romans are descendants of the Greeks. He says, "Ki ze emes hu v'Rabosenu modim bo." In other words, the Kitim are certainly descendants of Yavan. No, nobody denies that.
The Romans didn't have any Talmud of their own. They actually took the Talmud of the Yavanim and changed it slightly. But they were not to have a Talmud of their own, but rather they took the Greek philosophy.
Excellent. So in other words, we see that Kitim, even though they're descendants of Yavan, technically, biologically, or genetically, they are Yavanim, but nevertheless, they are Greece, and they are Rome, because Rome took their philosophy. So culturally, I guess you could say, they are Greek. Kimosha Amru, Chazal say this in Megillah, Italia shel Yavan, Zekrach Godol Sheberomi, V'yadua ki shem ha'aretz asher romi mechlola tikari b'sifreim u'bilshonim Italia. So we know that the city of Rome is identified as Italia. So in other words, Chazal are basically postulating some sort of relationship here between Yavan and Romi. Okay. He's giving an example from Knan. The Torah in Bereishis Yud testifies to the fact that all these nations are sons of Knan. Even though Knan is considered a nation unto itself, and Yevusi, Amori, Girgashi, Chiti are nations unto themselves. And he proves this from a pasuk in Dvarim, which lists Knan as a nation separate from Chiti, Girgashi, and Amori. V'haya kein b'avorki kol echem eilu abonim ha'ilu goy atzum, v'nikru chein ha'goyim ahem b'shem avihem, Ushar bnei Knan eshalo gavru kacheim nisiachsu elof. So the powerful children are called by separate names. The name of Knan is sort of a generic name that refers to all those sons who weren't as strong as their brothers. They were not the gavru keacheim. They weren't as mighty as their brothers, and they are identified as a relationship to the land of Knan, and they're called Knanim. V'chein Eretz Mitzrayim tisyaches li'av u'plishtim v'kaftorim bonov li'amim achir. So even though Mitzrayim is identified by the father, but there are many other nations that come from Mitzrayim and they are sons of Mitzrayim, like for example the Plishtim or the Kaftorim, and they also get names of themselves that are considered nations unto themselves. V'chein v'mishpachos acheros aneskaros v'parshas Pinchas. Okay, let's just fast forward. Afkan b'nei Yavan Elisha v'sharshis yachsu l'yavan v'malchus shlishis v'kitim hayil goy otzu v'chashu malchus revis. So that even though Kitim is one of the children, one of the descendants of Yavan, but nevertheless, because Kitim was a powerful nation, it's considered a kingdom unto itself. So again, the Ramban's kasha was, how can you call the Malchus Revius Rome Kitim when they in fact are Malchus Shlishis, namely Yavanim? The answer is that the children, if they become very powerful, become independent kingships or kingdoms. V'hi shetimoshech Malchusei ad HaMashiach v'tovei b'yado. And it is Rome whose kingdom will extend until the time of Mashiach, and will be destroyed by Mashiach. Okay, and this is going to lead us to the Ibn Ezra. He says, Rabbi Avram, the Ibn Ezra, Nishtavish, but say he made a real mistake, a real boo-boo. The Hichnis Bahem, and he identifies the fourth beast of the dream of Daniel as Yishmael. And, you know, the Ramban not only disagrees with the Ibn Ezra, but he also gives a psychological explanation why the Ibn Ezra was inclined to offer this interpretation. He says, because ki nafal pachdom olav. In other words, the Ibn Ezra lived at the time in which Yishmael was becoming so powerful, and he was so afraid, he was so awestruck, you know, the fear fell on him, and therefore Yishmael was such a powerful nation that it was impossible in the mind of the Ibn Ezra to have left, that Daniel could have left out Yishmael. How could it be that Yishmael is not represented by one of the beasts when Yishmael is such a powerful, awe-inspiring nation, such a destructive nation? Vitan, and the Ibn Ezra says, Echlo timon malchus gedola vatsuma kamoa. How is it possible that such a powerful nation, a great nation like Yishmael, would not be counted amongst the four kingdoms? V'zua taina mechesrin das, but this argument is because of his lack of understanding. Ki ha'arba malchus sherod Daniel kulam omdozu acharzu. The four malchus that Daniel saw in his vision were sequential, one after the other. There was a chronological sequence here. Kolachas goveres al kodemis. You know, one swallows the other and then is swallowed by the next one. V'tosefes ha-malchus mimena. Seizing, tofeses means to be tofes, to take over the malchus from it. You know, you destroy, you vanquish a nation, you take it over. V'chol achas mamsheches b'Yisrael shibud v'golus b'mei malchusa. And each of these four kingships will subjugate the Jewish people during the long, bitter exile and their respective kingships. And Daniel speaks about the Kazdim is Bavel. Vachreim, number two, is Haparsim, the Persians. They will take over the kingship from Bavel. V'yishtabdu banu, and they will subjugate us, the Jewish people. The Achraim, and the third Bimkomam, who takes the place of the Parsim, is the Yavanim. V'Achraim Yigburu Haromim V'Yitfisu Amalchus. And then the Romans will become mighty, and they will seize the kingship of Yishtabdu Osonu Ad Eis Haketz, and will be subjected up until the time of Mashiach. We will be subjected to the fourth kingship, namely to Rome. Kilo tiposek malchusam rak biyada goel, and Rome is so powerful that there's no one who could destroy and vanquish this powerful nation other than the goel, other than Mashiach himself. In other words, what the Ramban is saying is that if I look around at what's going on in my time, I can tell you, says the Ramban, that the powerful nation that's subjugating the Jewish people and the fourth kingship that brings Golus and exile upon the people is that of Rome. And Rome is so powerful that its kingship will only end at the time of Mashiach. V'hine Golusenu b'mei arba malchios, our Golus will continue into the period of the fourth of the four kingships. Aval im yeh ba'olam malchios acheros milvad ela b'mei arba ela. Then it could very well be that there are other kingdoms in the world besides these four that exist during the time of these four. But lo yimno samakosav, nevertheless they will not be counted. The pasuk in scriptures would never mention them. V'lo ra oson Daniel, and Daniel didn't see them in his vision. The Elo Tzor Klalbury Asim Liadias Haguula. There are only four nations that he, Daniel, has to see and perceive in his dream in order to have knowledge of the Geula. So again, what the Ramban is saying is that these four kingships that appear in the vision of Daniel are not necessarily the four most powerful nations that carry through all of human history. The Ishmaelim are a very powerful nation, and they will play a role in history. But they're not counted in the minyan Hamalchios because they will not subjugate the people of Israel. In other words, the four Malchios represent not the history of mankind, human history, but the history of the Jewish exile. And the Jewish exile goes through these four periods, the last of which is the exile of Romi, and that's going to take us all the way to this day. So the land of Israel is going to be dominated by the Babylonians, by the Persians, the Greeks, and finally by the Romans. And therefore the four nations or kingdoms that are hinted at, alluded to in the vision of Daniel, are these four exiles of the Jewish people. The first exile is Babel, and then Persia conquers Babel, and that's the second exile. The Greeks conquer the Persians, and finally Rome conquers the Greeks. Yishmael, however, never conquered Rome. And although the empire of Yishmael is a very powerful one, but even if it's powerful and maybe even more extensive than the exile of Rome, nevertheless, it's in a sense overshadowed by Rome, because Rome, in this process of the four kingships, is the one who's going to vanquish the Greeks, the third of the four. And that's why he says, Hine bimei paras v'yavon v'gam hayom yesh ba'olam malchios gedolos milvad Rome Yishmael. There are many other contemporaneous powerful nations or kingdoms in the world, not just Rome and Yishmael. Ka'an she hodu v'kush v'romona v'hatatar. So these are the Indians and the Ethiopians, and then there's a nation called Romana, and there's Tartar. Now, who is Romana? I don't know. Not sure who that is. And who is Tatar? These are the Mongolians. Okay? And they live contemporaneously with the Romans. So there are many, many different Malchus and kingships. But why are these four singled out? He says, Alkein Yachshov Malchios Rabos. Why doesn't Daniel count many, many kingdoms besides the four kingdoms? The answer is that these four would take over one after the other, and after vanquishing the previous nation or kingship, they will subjugate the Jewish nation in their exile. So those nations who don't appear in the dream of Daniel, that's because they were not one of those nations that took over and exiled the Jewish people. Yadua ki Romi Higlasnu. Is that how you read it? Higlasnu Bimei Aspasianus, that's Vespian, Vititus, Lo Yishmaelim. So in other words, after the Greeks, let's say, so the Babylonians destroyed the first bias, then we rebuilt the second temple, and then the Greeks took over, the Persians, the Greeks, and finally the Second Temple was destroyed at the hands of the Romans, not at the hands of the Ishmaelim. Lachain, and therefore, Bechol Mokom Sha'anu, wherever we are, Gam Bi Yishmael, even if we enter into the lands of Yishmael, Gam Bahodu V'Kush, even if we were entering into or settling in the land of India or Ethiopia, Begolus Romi Anachnu, we're always considered to be in the exile of Rome, even though we're living in the lands of Yishmael. And that's paradoxical. But the answer is because it's the Romans who are responsible for driving us out of the land of Israel. And at the time of the fourth Golus and the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, therefore this Golus that we're in now is called Golus Romi. And when will the exile of Rome come to its termination? Atshe Toved Zichra. Until its memory will be absolutely blotted out, Vini Goel Mimena will be redeemed from it. And that's going to happen at the time of Mashiach. Umi Odea V'ulai Toved Od Malchus Yishmael Koda Mashiach. In other words, since Bilam is prophesizing that the fourth of the four kingships will be destroyed at the time of Mashiach, it could be that the Malchus of Yishmael will be destroyed before the Mashiach. Okay, Rabbi say this could be very important. If we get to see the destruction of Yishmael, we shouldn't think that that's the end of history, because we still have to anticipate something even greater, and that's Mashiach. Aval achaya revius hi asher higlasani. But the fourth beast in the vision of Ibn Ezra is the one that exiled us, Kamosha Omar. According to the Ramban. What did I say, Yishmael? I'm sorry, if I said Yishmael, I meant to say Romi. Kamosha Omar, and this is indicated in the pasuk itself. Vekarna dekein avda krav im kadishin v'yachla lahon. Okay, this is pasuk Chaf Aleph. Here, you have it in front of you. I underlined it there. It says that I had watched as the horn waged wars with the holy ones and was prevailing over them. Okay, and these are the horns of the Kitim, of the Romans. The Timshoch Banu Galusa Ad HaMashiach. And this exile will continue until the time of the Mashiach. The Siv Ad. Again, this is the next pasuk right afterwards. Pasuk Chav Beis, it's a little bit bolded. Ad di Asa Atik Yoma, until the one of ancient days. The Atik Yoma is always a reference to the Almighty. And he will come. Vidine, I think it means he will judge. Vidine Yehiv Likadishe El Yonin. He will give the a justice to the holy ones, the supreme holy ones, Vizimna Mato Malchusa Chesinu Kadishin. The holy ones will inherit the kingship. Okay, is that the last piece in the Ramban that you have, or you have a little bit more than that? I think you have a few more lines. He says, V'chol Mevin V'maras Daniel Yimtzaz Emefur Sham. In the second vision, he sees the ram goring. The ram is a symbol of Persia. And then he sees Hatsafir Hasair, which is a he-goat, who melech Yavan, that symbolizes Yavan. Vakeren Agdol, but the large horn. Hu HaMelech HaRishon, Alexander HaGover Al-Paras. Okay, so the Alexander the Great, who's the first king of Greece, is called by Daniel HaKeren HaGdola, Uke Atzmo Tishover Malchuso V'Samodna Arba Tachteha. What does Uke Atzmo mean? Oh, Itzu, Etzem. Etzem means the powerful one. And at its most powerful point, Tishavar Malchuso, the kingship was broken. The Tamoda Arba Tachteha.
It's split.
The horn itself split.
The Yavan split.
Right, at the time of the defeat of Alexander the Great. Ve'em Arba Shalishav HaMolchim Tachto V'moso. And as a result, the four new horns refer to Alexander's four officers, dividing up the kingdom, and ruled in his place upon his death. So Alexander dies very young. I think he was 32, and his empire was divided up amongst his four generals. One general took Egypt, the other took Assyria and Babylonia, the third one, which is Antignos, he took Persia. And Philip, who was Alexander's brother, he took Macedonia. This is all explained by the Abarbanel in his work Mayone HaYeshua. The Hizkir Akosuv Umina Achas Mehen Yotza Keren Achas Mitzeira VeTigdal Yeser El Hanegev VeEl Mizrach VeLatzvi VeOmer BaViad Sar HaTzova Higdil Menuhuram HaTomid. So he goes through the whole history. This is not for us now. And then at the end, after he describes all these four, he says, Visham od rayos gedolos, rayos acheros bazeh. There are many other proofs in Daniel to this interpretation, that the fourth of the four beasts and the four kingships represents Romi, the Kabbalah, Rabbi Seinu, Emesi, Eina, Tzricha, Chizik. There's no need for any more proofs. On the other side of your page, you should have a piece from Rav Dessler. Of course, when I need it, I can't find it. Okay, wait 1 second. Here it is. And this is called Hagolios, the Ikvos Mashicha. This is his insight into the various exiles and the time of Mashiach. He says that there's a very important significance to clarify all these Golios and what they signify when the peoples of Israel go into exile amongst the various nations. Because Golos is part of Hanhagat Shemaim, it's part of the divine supervision of the people, and it comes to awaken within us and to teach us how to fix and rectify ourselves. And here we underline the third line. It says, "Inyan haGolus eino mevurar, chaserim limudim ikarim ba'avodas Hashem." He says it's not always crystal clear to understand the meaning that's inherent in each Golus. Mikoshken olenu levarer es inyan haGolus ba anu nimtzayim, and how much more so, it's critical that we understand the period of Golus that we are experiencing. Because if you really understand the Gemara in Sota very well, you'll come to the conclusion that our generation is the generation of Ikvas de Mashicha. We are really standing at the crossroads in which the Redeemer of Israel is about to reveal himself. It would be a great loss, therefore, if we don't learn what these Hanhagos Bidei Shemayim are all about, and if we don't prepare ourselves for the moment of Mashiach. And he writes that we see many Jews that are coming to Eretz Yisrael. There's a very strong movement, a gravitational pull to Eretz Yisrael. And we're beginning to see that the Shibud of the nations is beginning to weaken. The land of Israel is beginning to give its fruits. But yet, at the same time, we're seeing something called Chutzpah Yazgi. The Gemara in Sota describes the period of Mashiach as Chutzpah Yazgi. That a kind of I don't know what the English word of chutzpah is. There is a word, but I forgot what it is. Yazgi, it reigns supreme. Parkei ol malchus shemayim moshlim b'kippa. That there's so many people who reject the yoke of heaven, and they are very important people. They are very, you know, politically very well placed. Umizgoyim. Mizgoyim means they're guilty of gaiva. They're very full of themselves. Al kibush Eretz Yisrael v'yishuva v'kochi v'yotzim yadi. You see, it's very hard for us to understand Rav Dessler's description because we don't live in that period of time. He lived about the time of the establishment of the State of Israel. You know, that's when he flourished. He was in England at the time. Then he eventually, I think, he came to Eretz Yisrael. And the real issue then between the religious Zionists and the secular Zionists is, you know, whether we attribute the successes of Zionism, you know, to God or to our own power, so to speak. That was the Koch of Yotzim Yadi Machlokas. And he says the following, Tochen HaGolus, in the second paragraph. We still have 2 minutes. We'll try to see if we can get to at least one point here. He says that in all the various Golios, beginning with Mitzrayim, the Egyptian exile, until the current contemporary exile, the essence of Golos is that the Jewish people are given over to the control and the sovereignty of the non-Jewish population who are afflicting them and subjugating them. But that perspective is only superficial. And if we go below the surface and we try to penetrate to the very substance or essence on a spiritual level of Golos of exile, we will begin to realize that it's not the tsaros that we're suffering from that is the primary element here, but rather the challenge of exile That's really the substance or the essence of exile. The all the tsaris that we suffer is in order to intensify the challenge, the nisayon that we face. But ultimately, gola should be identified not as suffering, but rather as challenge. The suffering is part of the divine plan to challenge the Jewish people. And therefore, when we investigate the various exiles from this perspective, we see that they're not all made of the same stuff. That each exile has its own particular challenge to the Jewish people. And it's not always that the exile, he says, I underline this, lo b'chol makom hakdusha he begolus etzel osa hatuma. In other words, you cannot compare the challenges of the exile of Mitzrayim to the challenges of the exile of Babylonia, to the exile of Yavon, to the exile of Edom, Romi. Each one has its own unique challenge. Shinui ofi v'mido shel kol uma v'uma. Every nation brings its own attributes, its own character, and that's going to challenge the Jewish people. It's almost as if there are bad midos that are represented by those nations that subjugate us, and we are challenged to face up to those bad midos and overcome them. So you'll see that he develops a thesis that Romi is identified with the midah of gaiva, of, you know, being totally full of themselves. You know, the Pax Mora, you know, the Romans said, you know, either you join us or we defeat you. You know, they wanted to swallow the whole world. Their kfira, their denial of God, was kochi v'otzim yodi, that we are great. And therefore the challenge of the fourth golus is to face up to that midah of gaiva and all the challenges on a spiritual level are going to lead to the ikvus of the Mashiach, which you'll see on the bottom left of your page. He says, "Mi'ar chub rabayis god of alhola koach agayva shel malchus arviyus." He says, "What's the choshech and the hester of the fourth golus, namely the golus of Romi? That's the koach agayva shebo beitio shel chait adam arisha, which connects us back to the original sin." He says, "Holchim a golin hashkafos hachubius hamisgaberes." And man thinks with the development of science that he is great. And he thinks that hakol bidei Adam, that everything is given over to man. There's nothing that man cannot control and cannot conquer. You know, man is going to put a flag on the moon. Hashkafos hapikursus al yonis koach ha'adam holeches umatzifos es kol ha'olam kulo. This hashkafa about the greatness of man is going to swallow up the whole world. And that's, I think he's referring here perhaps to the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, and the Holocaust, because when that goal reaches its, you know, man, you know, the Aryan nation, you know, Aryan nation means the hashkafa of Elyonius Elyoniyut koach ha'adam, and that's going to be what Chazal call chutzpah yazgi. That at the time of the Mashiach, Bikvus of the Mashiach, Gemara says in Sota, chutzpah will reign. What is chutzpah? Chutzpah is the belief in the greatness of oneself. Man is great. He's the ultimate God figure. You know, there's nothing that man can't do. But why did I want to add this? Because once we have the Ramban in Parshas Bolak, who sets up the four Malchus, it's fascinating to see that there's a message here, not just about Jewish history and those who conquered and subjugated the Jews, but there's a message on an ethical level about the unique character of each one of these kingships, the four, and how we are facing in each one of those Golios the challenge, the Nisayon of that Midah, to overcome and subjugate that midah. Okay, Rabosai, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to finish the whole thing. This is a very long topic when you speak about Golos. It's as long as Jewish history, as long as the Yiddish Golos. But at least I feel we did a Ramban inside and, you know, plow through the text of the Ramban to give us a framework and an introduction to this topic, which is so central to Parshas Bolak. take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbat, Shabbat Shalom. Everyone should enjoy Shabbos, okay?